We're starting a new chelik, a new chapter of the Pelyoitz. Page 63, we're trudging along. Thank Baruch Hashem, I think we're really knocking away. Uh-huh. We're already in Beis. Now we're Bareach. What's the word Bareach mean? Page 63, Bareach. What? Bareach. Bareach means to run, right? It depends. Some people are running to, it depends what you're running to or what you're running away from. But somebody, at some point, some people in life, they're constantly running. Either they're running towards a mitzvah, or they're running away from an avera, or they're running away from a mitzvah and they're running towards an avera. But at the end of the day, that's always the state of man. The state of man is always in a constant state of running. Chazal tell us in Pesachas Avis, have a rats la mitzvah barech min avera, to run towards mitzvahs and to run away from averas. Indian habricha, he lios choshish afil choshash rechoki. He says, this is a very big issue. He's speaking about really the idea of what's called yirah shamayim. What defines you? What animates you? What is called Yirat Shamayim itself? Yirat Shamayim is to be concerned that even for the smallest chashash of an avera. To be so concerned that maybe, what? God forbid to get involved in this issue and that issue. Okay, like we have a situation right now about, I'm trying to get my daughter into a school, into a particular school. She's 3 years old. We're not talking like, you know, basic echoes and, you know, she, all these different things. You know. We're talking about like, just a basic thing, getting to her school, but she needs a certain evaluation, and the one person that we're going to is not officially recognized bureaucratically, but somebody is, and that person doesn't want to do it, but the other person is willing to do the evaluation. So then can you have the evaluation be done by one person and then be signed by the other person? You know, these are all moral questions. These are all halakhic questions that a person has to ask themselves.
Yeah, but if it's
So if you have already a blanket, if you already have a blanket, heter, towards whatever you want, yeah, say that. It's amazing. The yisoid hagadol is that a person should ask shailos to a rav, which is again. In the imbi that we Baruch Hashem, we have Dine Hollander in our coil to be involved with, to be able to ask our shilas to, because it's not a pashut thing to ask somebody who's holding on Chesha Mishpat, who's holding on Yerideya, Ebenezer, you know, Mamash Dalcha Kishachan Arach, to be able to really be responsible Jews. We're holding in Bereach, we're speaking with the Indian of running away from an Avera. What does it mean to run away from an Avera and to have the mindset of, I don't want to get involved in shilas? Maybe, I don't want to get involved. That's a Yisoyed Mahalach Avis. Amruch Kam Kane. Ahav es Hashemo. You should. It says the Derech Eretz Zuta. It says you should love the possible. What does that even mean? Ahav es Hashemo. Meaning, what does that mean? Perhaps, maybe this might be an issue. Maybe that might be an issue. And having the concern, having Yiras Shamayim of, well, that might be a problem. I'm not going to mess around with that. That's the attitude that a person should properly have. I'll call Malcolm. Because why? On the perhaps, if I'm involved in this, it may come to a problem for me. I mean, how many times a person says, that restaurant? Everybody goes to that restaurant. There's the Heksher, right? You know about this Heksher?
E-E-T,
what is it called? E-E-T Heksher. E-E-T is everybody eats there.
I'm not saying.
You know the story. You're not saying hold of it.
There is such a thing.
Yeah, there is such a thing.
You see other from you than going to a place.
Yes.
The stomach is okay.
There is such a possibility. There is such a possibility until we don't talk like that in public. That's number one. But listen, Rabbi Schleider. Let's keep the filter at like 100 today. Okay, listen. That's number one. Number two. What you're saying is an important point, and it's true. Doesn't matter, but it's very true. Until you enter into one very interesting, until you introduce into the conversation one important point, which is profit motive. The minute profit becomes a motive, you can't just assume and rely, the people that sell it, they're Jews. The people that buy it are Jews. It's kosher. You know, people used to think, when I was growing up, you come to Israel, anything that had Hebrew on it, it was a heksher, right? It has Hebrew on it. You can't rely on these things. Because the minute money gets involved, it's a big problem. That's why the whole concept of Heksherim even exists. Did you know, Api Halacha, technically the Rambam Paskins, you can literally eat in anyone's house whenever you want. If the person that eats in your house, I mean, if you're eating someone else's house, I apologize, you can assume the Chazaka, the person is going to give you something kosher. Right?
Eight Echad Nimbisurin. But not with money.
I just said this, exactly, this is the point, which is that when a person has the profit motive, and this is a famous Gemara, the B'nai Mechuza, that the Gemara says that they used to sell tarfus to people. They didn't care, they had Ramamish, the worst businessmen they could possibly believe. They literally would sell treif to everyone. But you could eat in their house, the Gemara says. You could eat in their house. What's the pshat? Pshat is because in their house, there's no profit motive. You're their guest. But in the store, believe me, you know, all is fair in the game of capitalism, right? You can do whatever you want. That's not your shemaim.
People won't come to your house or come to you kiddushim and eat there. Your kashrus is not like their top thing. Hey, is this a real
problem? Okay. One second. Well, let's get to that in a second. What are you asking me?
What?
Al pi halacha, according to the letter of the law, 100%. Ah, what's the difference? The difference is not everybody is now. That was in a time period where people were actually much more aware and much more, I would say, less ignorant about the halacha. But now that people are very ignorant. Literally, people are very ignorant. People are very ignorant. Or more specifically, people became very ideological. They say, you know what? My wife used to work with a coworker that held al pidin that it's usher to eat anything else other than the rabbanut, because since the state of Israel is the reisha smichas gulatenu, that means that the rabbanut is the final decisor of all halacha, because that will be the bezon hagadol. This is what a woman told my wife. I said, therefore, it is prohibited to eat any other heksher. It's actually an affront to the state of Israel and to the Jewish people, and to eat anything different is disrespectful. She also said, Giyar, it's a little great, whatever. It's a lot of big mishmash. What? Chas v'shalom, and therefore, no, chas v'shalom. And the point only is to say is that some people get crazy ideological. The minute Zionism gets introduced, the minute, you know, Frumkeit gets, again, believe me, it applies to all sides, and in ideology gets thrown in as opposed to Allah. However, the people will say, but here, Hechsherim, it's all politics. You ever heard that before? Hechsherim, it's all politics. Yeah, it's all politics. Not true, by the way. That's not true. It's not true.
It's not all politics.
But the difference is that
it's not true. To purely define as politics is disrespectful, yes.
I hear that the standards are very high for all of them, but the level of mashgiach and
thank you, very good.
Changes.
Yeah, but the very good. Change. That's very true. Very true. To a degree, a lot of the Hechsherim standards are pretty much the equal. The difference is how they actually carry it out. Right? A lot of places, they unfortunately will hire people that are not religious. They'll have Arab workers working in the back that are involved with the ingredients, not just prep or cleaning up, but literally part of the parcel of the food making process. We're not even talking about Bishul. Let's say they even got a mishkiach that morning to light the fire. Or they have the Jew involved in the actual, you know, cooking itself, you know, to keep for the svardim. But they send them out to go to the local store. There's a story once. There's a crazy story where a store ran out of meat, and they asked the Arab worker to go to the makol around the corner. He said he couldn't find it, so he went to the. It was relatively local that he was able to go across the East Jerusalem. He bought from the halal store. It didn't bother him. What's the difference to him? He doesn't care, and he doesn't. He got the change exactly. Yeah. How'd they find out? Oh, because afterwards they found out in the trash. The mashgiach was going through the trash, and he found that there was halal Beit Yosef was in the trash can. Yeah. Right? From Rabbanut Ramallah, right? Anyway, okay. What, the Mullah de Ramallah, what? I don't remember specifically. No, Chas v'Shalom, let's not put names out there. That's literally what's the Shemra. Okay, therefore, the Chayn Akol... Now, that's in terms of, let's say, like, concern of getting involved in certain places. Again, we're not even going into the element of, like, you go into a store and the music is not kosher, the type of chevra that are there not kosher.
From the house,
yes.
And they say, you know, all the things
with the dog. Yes. So this is a very interesting point. Unless you really, really know the person really personally, Rav Berkowitz and even Rav Berkowitz doesn't even allow for that necessarily. Rav Berkowitz is very opposed to buying from a place that doesn't have a regular hatcher or an external hatcher. Because the minute, again, you introduce the profit motive, people's morals, unfortunately, will just go haywire. What does that mean?
What's your average weight? How much chumras of the way the vegetables are washed or all these different things do these young American girls know?
I'm so confused. Why? You guys, you're saying it's even more reason not to. I hear. Okay. I mean, listen. I happen to believe that a lot of these women are probably not serving their husband's treif. Let's just assume that. You know, they're preparing. The Rashi tells us in quite a few places, Maseches Chulin, I believe, also Maseches Ksubis. The Rashi tells us that the whole yesoid of Eidah Echlan B'Yisurin is actually dependent on your wife. It's gebait on your wife. It's built on the entire premise that how Rashi even says b'tmiyah. He says, how could a person ever eat in their own home if they can't trust their wife to cook the food? That's what I just said. The whole yesoid of Erech Mishorin is gebait. It's built on the fact that we trust our wives. You have to trust your wife. And by definition, okay, you don't have to trust, you know, Shlemi, boy, next door's wife. And I agree, but at least to the extent that you don't think that he's eating trade from his wife. Okay, what does that mean? Now, but again, profit motive. It's not not necessarily they don't know. Maybe they're very, very well versed in the halachas. The difference is that what happens? They messed up an order or something. They bought from either a completely wrong hechsher that was totally not reliable, and or they dropped something in that was treif and it wasn't batel b'shishim. But they're saying, oyvei, I have this order that's due in like another hour. Exactly, they're mor heter. They're mor heter because the minute profit motive comes up, embarrassment comes up, people will do things in order to save face. Right, even unfortunately.
Isn't it almost nearly Chilul Hashem to disregard other people's hechsher?
This is definitely very true. This is a very, very big yisoid. 100%, it's definitely a concern, especially people, you have to respect, if your wife is working in an environment that's not necessarily a Haredi 100% environment, then yeah, it's very, very problematic. My wife had this issue for many, many years. She worked in an office where her co-worker was this co-worker telling her that she felt it was disrespectful to her, that she wouldn't eat any of the cake that she brought from the home. And which is, by the way, nobody asks, isn't it disrespectful to bring a cake and then force it on other people? No, that nobody asks. Right? That's not most of it. That's not what Pshel Salanter worked for thousands of years on, to work on the idea of like, maybe I shouldn't impose myself on people. Fine, beseder, but nagid. But you're right. This is the world that we live in. The world that we live in is that if you're from her, you're obviously more mean. Like, okay, I don't know why it became that way. I don't know how it became that way. Yeah, listen, it can only work for so long. Okay, you're working in an office for 7 years. Like, oh, you're not that for 7 years, and you're still getting away. You have no, like, something's going on. But the point is to say is that it's not a simple situation, and you need to don each situation according to its challenges. It's certainly a big challenge, which is why it's always better to work in a different environment. That's the answer. Yes.
But it's a very fine line, because there are situations in which certain chumras of a person can really produce
So for number one, there's ways of going about it. You don't have to say, listen, what you're eating is not kosher. You never put down or belittle somebody else. I know a story of Rav Gustman. Now I want to tell you the Rabbanut. I don't eat Rabbanut stam. I don't eat Rabbanut meat. I don't eat Rabbanut vegetables. I think that's like pretty obvious and understood. But there have been situations and times where, let's say, Gedolei Yisrael, Rav Zev Gustman, for example, Rav Zev Gustman told one of his son-in-law told me this. His Michal Berniker of Hashalom. He told me, he said there were times and situations where Avreichim were so poor they couldn't afford the Badatz meat, the Mahajim meat, that Rav Zev Gusman used to tell them, go buy the Rabbanut meat. Go buy the Rabbanut Stam meat.
Don't eat meat too hard. Go buy.
That's obvious. Yeah, we're going to... Our Rav has to take those things into account. Okay, listen, yesh v'yesh, every God will be so allowed to do what they want. Within the bounds of halacha. But the point is that we're not saying it's not kosher, it's 100% kosher. It is kosher, 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 and no one's going to say other abunat. The challenge is that you're relying on a lot of roivs and chazakas. Right? For example, one of the big things that the Shaykhtim do is they have where badats, for example, if I remember correctly, I haven't looked into this in a few years, but I used to give shiur on this to my students. In the shlachtois, in the slaughterhouse, when the Shaykhid is shechting, he checks the knife for any types of challenge or pigimas or any types of breaking in the knife after I think every 5 or 6 shchitas, which is pretty intense. I mean, because you know how many shchitas they're doing in a day in chickens?
Hundreds, thousands
sometimes. Thousands. I know people that go to Argentina that just literally are there for 2 weeks. They shecht and they shecht chickens and behemoths in the thousands, in the tens of thousands. Yeah, 100%. Right? Anyway, the point only is to say is that these things need to be discussed with a Rav. You need to understand. Oh, no, sorry. I was in the middle of the point with the Rabbanut. The Rabbanut, unfortunately, okay, listen, they have what to rely on. They say most animals, mistama, the knife is probably not going to be nifgam after, let's say, like 100 shechtin. So we're going to check after 100. We're not going to go crazy and make the shechit check after every 10 times. And then, yeah, well, mafreya, mistama was a chazaka, mistama was roiv. Again, you're relying on a lot of roivs, which are not incorrect ideas. Roiv and chazaka is a true halachic reality. But what they're trying to do is to find the standard that is the most equal for everyone, to lower prices, to make sure that people that would never eat kosher are at least eating kosher. That's what we call kiruv perspective, and kiruv perspective isn't halachic Judaism all the time. Let's be honest. No, I mean that. A lot of times, a lot of times, Rav Asher Weiss. Thank you. That's what you're saying. Yeah, Rav Asher Weiss many times. When you have, I'm saying a bigger, finer point of view. I said that. That the Rav Asher Weiss will oftentimes get questions from kiruv professionals. And these are like the types of questions that he gets, and he has to like set them straight, being like, oh, could we like get together and do like a hookah night and like a smoking night to get people into being frum. And I was privy to this meeting that they had with these professionals. Be like, that's the most ridiculous idea I've ever heard in my entire life. No, like that is, he said, it's a chil Hashem. So it's a chil Hashem that a person should be thinking, even that mindset, be like, oh, let's get the boys together. Let's get some beer. Let's get some nargilo. Let's get smoke. You know, obviously, unfortunately, marijuana is going to be involved in that as well. I'm just putting it out there, being honest. And Rosh Hashanah is like, what's wrong with you? Because when you have only the kirov mindset and not Torah mindset and not halachic mindset, and yes, unfortunately, those are all three different things, then yeah, you may come to realism. What do you mean? You know, there's a story once in a certain university where they, for the Hanukkah party, boys and girls together, they had the local Kiruv couple that was there, they had a toga party.
Oh, wait.
Okay, fight there. Anyway, kids are Hashem should help us. Loi! You're a Shamayim. You're a Shamayim has to be the only and one and only thing. Baruch Hashem. And yet it's important that a person should ask a Rosh Hashanah what he means and how he meant that, and which situation did he mean it? Shkoyah.